Welcome to another edition of Uncensored with Penny Faree, brought to you proudly by IPSS Electronic Security.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Uncensored. On today's show, so corruption in municipalities isn't just a problem, it's a crisis. Across South Africa, tender fraud and procurement abuse are hollowing out local government, crippling service delivery, and threatening the very fabric of our communities. Today, we turn the spotlight to our own region, Kwadukuza Municipality, where mounting evidence suggests that corruption is not incidental, but deeply systematic. Behind closed doors, tenders are being questioned, millions are unaccounted for, and a growing chorus of voices, ratepayer associations, civil society watchdogs, whistleblowers, opposition councillors, and everyday residents are pushing back against an ANC-led council accused of sidestepping accountability. The question is, where do things stand now and who's paying the price? Joining me in the studio today for this very important discussion is community activist and former Kwadukuza councillor Stephanie Ashworth, a key voice in the community, and Action SA's whip Sipho Zungu, a vocal opposition member holding council to account. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Benny.
Thanks, Benny, for having me here.
Yeah, so before we unpack specific examples of tender fraud with my guests, I want to give listeners some background to help frame this discussion. Right now, Kwadukuza Municipality is under investigation by three key bodies. So in January this year, President Cyril Ramaphosa mandated the Special Investigation Unit to probe allegations of serious maladministration involving three tenders awarded to the municipality. And the tenders under investigation was a 2019 contract for the construction of the Kwadukuza Mall bulk electricity supply and the upgrade of an industrial substation. So together that amount was about 16 million rand. And then the other one's the appointment of a panel of contractors for road rehabilitation. That was also approximately about 30 million rand. So after the SIU completes its investigations, it submits a final report to the president, who can initiate civil litigation in the High Court or a special tribunal to recover losses for unlawful contracts. And if there's evidence of criminal conduct, the SIU also can refer the matter to the National Prosecuting Authority for prosecution. So, you know, we are under pressure. The civil society pressure has intensified. Local residents, particularly the Dolphin Coast Ratepayers Association, pushed for further accountability, which led to the Kwadukuza Natal Department of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, which is COCTA. They launched their own investigation shortly after the SIU. And then most recently, NERSA, the National Energy Regulator of South Africa, also stepped in following pressure from DOCRA again. And they've agreed to currently audit Kwadukuza's electricity grid. So these investigations in one municipality in itself is progress, but we're still waiting for answers from all three of them. And obviously, I reached out to the SIU this week for an update. They haven't responded. DOCRA, when I contacted DOCRA, they said they also haven't received any feedback from the SIU or COCTA. So we're going to be looking at these investigations and hoping that something is going to come out of it. So Stephanie, let's start with you. While you were still serving in council in 2023, you and Action SA tabled a motion calling on the municipal manager to investigate the awarding of a specific tender to a particular contractor. Now, what prompted that move and what discrepancies or red flags did you uncover in the process? Can you just unpack it for us just to understand the capacity of the tender, rigging that we could possibly be dealing with?
Thanks, Penny. If I can start from the beginning.
Yes.
I was on the finance portfolio. To give you an understanding, we collect our documents on a Sunday for a portfolio meeting, usually on a Wednesday. We've got over 1,000 pages to read between Sunday and Wednesday. Yeah. Some of the financial side, the writing is less than a millimeter big.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Who has the time to read that? Well, thank goodness I did.
Yeah.
By sheer coincidence, I'd gone through the lines of the SCC. This is the awards that were coming out, and there was a particular name that caught my attention. One, because it was an unusual name, and secondly, because I had used their services a couple of months previously. So we had a look at this, and both these amounts were exactly the same for a particular tender at on the Mavavani rehabilitation process.
Can I just interrupt briefly? So there were two contractors who bid for this tender.
Yes.
The one that you you recognize, and then the other contractor.
Yes. Okay. So the amounts were exactly the same. So the one contractor was wholly female owned, triple BEE, and based in Ballito. They also had previously disadvantaged ladies. It's 100% female owned, previously disadvantaged ladies that lived in Sharker's Head. The other one was owned by one man who ran a bed and breakfast and a beverage company in Pietermaritzburg. We tried to find details of that person and nothing was available to us. We couldn't find contact details. We couldn't find anything. And via resources, we found his ID number. He was a 50, 60-year-old man based in Pietermaritzburg. So I raised the alarm in that regard.
Was the contract awarded to him?
Yes, the contractor was awarded to him. Yeah. So I raised the alarm in finance. I was ignored. I got all the documents together and I gave each of the 10 finance portfolio members, including the mayor at that time, which was the lady, what's her
Linda
name?
Linda.
Yes. Kana. Yes. Yeah. So everyone got a whole batch of documents showing why this tender was incorrect. It then moved to council. Everybody at council got these same documents and they started laughing. And I said, they're laughing not because it's funny. They're laughing because they're embarrassed and they should be embarrassed.
Yeah. So when you brought this item to council, did you request that they needed to investigate it?
Yes.
Or did you ask, why was this contract awarded to this particular contractor who lives in Maritzburg, who runs a B&B, who's got no experience to run, you know, the capacity in this, in this ward to do this work, yet the company that was rejected with the same price, that came and bid the same price, who ticked all the boxes, why were they denied the contract? And what was their response other than laughing? Did they say they were going to investigate it?
Nothing was said.
Yeah.
Nothing was said. And via the MM, I think Nell approached the MM for answers, and I don't think he got any answers. Shortly thereafter, I left council, so I'm not too sure what had happened.
Yeah. And was there any willingness to investigate this further?
No.
Nothing. No. So there was there even resistance from councillors who said, you know what, this is not a big line item, you know, let's leave it. Nothing.
It was just totally ignored.
Yeah.
Just totally ignored.
Yeah. And you resigned as councillor last year. In your time inside council, what stood out the most to you in terms of maladministration beyond just tenders? Were there patterns of behaviours that raised concerns about how municipality was being run? Can I just clarify for the listeners? I mean, you're the only white woman councillor after the DA's Tammy Collier moved to the provincial legislature. So this is a big thing. One woman in council with a very loud voice, picking up all these discrepancies, speaking out, and I've listened to you when I've attended council meetings, and yet were you a mute voice or did they actually take you seriously?
No, they constantly reminded me of my white privilege and the madam that's coming there and giving them instruction. I think I was one of the few people that actually read the documents because I could go to pages and show items that they just had this astounded look on their faces. Nobody has the time to read those documents.
But why are you saying that? Because they're getting over 40,000 rand a month salaries, you know, and it's not a full-time 8-to-5 job. I don't understand how that can, you know, be an excuse, because I know I've sat with 1,000-page document trying to find one line item to go through, and it's very laborious, it's hard, but I have to do it. How can they say there's no time?
Penny, I think with due respect, the pressure that councillors are put under, you know, they've got communities to look after and they've got documents to read. And that if they if they sit on portfolios, so they've got over 1,000 documents to read for a finance committee, then they've got probably another 1,000 documents to read for a council meeting. In between that, they've got to do their council duties, they've got to attend to the needs of people. Mm-hmm. I think councillors aren't given the recognition they deserve for those councillors that actually work.
I'm saying there's a lot of councillors that aren't actually in their wards and not doing any work.
Exactly.
I can think of five at the top of my head. So,
Ward 4.
Yeah, that's a discussion for another day. Sipho, I'm going to say you've been very local in council about the shocking 35.7 million heist that took place at the end of January when the municipality's primary bank account was hacked. And the amount was transferred into accounts of 15 different beneficiaries. Now, this story made national headlines, but so far, no one has been criminally charged. There's been little official update, and the public continue to demand answers, and nothing has been forthcoming. So what's exactly going on behind the scenes? And do you believe the council is genuinely committed to uncovering the truth and holding those responsible accountable?
Well, Penny, as you've just mentioned, that there actually hasn't been much feedback.
Yeah.
When this matter was presented to council, as council, we took a decision that we must be given an update every fortnight, so every 2 weeks or so. That was upheld for the first month and a half, and thereafter we would then be updated as and when the MM or whoever was presenting at that time felt we needed to be updated, which is wrong. But then obviously once... after much pressure, because the reports that we were initially brought were very... It looked like someone had done their homework at the last minute, if you put it that way.
Yeah.
We had asked for a comprehensive report. We had asked for the APSA investigation, for APSA forensic report. And for the first 2 to 3 times, we were just brought these 1 pages, 2 pages that were really vague, not really giving us much details. But eventually, once... we had received the APSA forensic
report. Which was a very comprehensive report.
Very.
And it basically outlined how it happened.
Exactly.
I read through it and it basically even gave instructions to quote accusers.
It obviously shed light. It shed much light that we needed on the matter and who was involved and how the money went missing. And I think it also exposed a number of weaknesses and discrepancies even within our own administration. But obviously once that was presented to us in council, we were then aware, okay, X amount of money was taken. This is how it was taken. These are the accounts it was put into. And obviously,
and we got a list of those accounts because someone leaked
that
into the social media.
That list was made public. And I think everyone at this point, everyone living under the sun in KDM knows that list. Or at least
it was shared widely.
But obviously, since then, and fortunately, we have retrieved a great portion of that number.
But almost 5 million still missing.
Yes.
You can't say, it's only 5 million, because 30 million, half five, we got that back. That's how I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Is council's,
That is exactly, I believe, the attitude that the administration has now taken. But obviously, when we have raised this, and we have raised this in council, we were told that no... an investigation is taking place. We are taking X company to High Court to liquidate. Mind you, it's a shell company, so I don't even think we can get the
And
money
how much
out of
are
there.
They actually spending? I've heard that the bill to get this shell company to give back the money is costing Quadacuzan legal fees almost a few hundred thousand, almost like R1 million to get a High Court interdict and that. This is costly that the ratepayers are now footing.
Well, on that, I would assume that that bill, by the time it comes to council, will probably be well in the millions. I mean, when it came to suspending the CFO, they spent close to about 4 million.
4 million to suspend the CFO and a 37,000 rand bank.
But obviously, coming back to the matter of the 35 million, as actually I said, we've obviously written to the MM because the lull on the whole matter is quite concerning for 2 to 3 reasons, which I'll get into now shortly. So we have written to the MM, in which the MM has responded to say that a status update report would be presented to council at the end of this month. However, it's concerning that there's a lull because in a recent council meeting, we were dealing with the Q3 risk management report. And in that report, because Stephanie has actually mentioned something that most councils actually don't even read most of the agenda.
Yeah. And I know, I think a majority of them don't read
majority.
It. Because when I ask questions, I get a blank look in their faces. Like I said, you know this item, what are you guys? And it's like, which one? Yeah.
Yeah, and unfortunately, a lot of them also too do tend to read items in isolation as if they're standalone. Yeah. But most of the items actually lend into each other. And once this report was presented to us, the quarterly risk management report, I obviously had referred back to our risk management register that was presented to us at the beginning of the financial year, which I think most people have forgotten. And one of the issues there was, one of the tasks that was given to our IT department was the procurement of cybersecurity software, which, quite frankly, would have helped in terms of preventing the theft of the 35
this million. This was done, is this for this year? Hey?
This financial year.
Because the CFO had raised the issues last mm-hmm. year, and it was itemized in council, but nothing happened.
So this item was actually dated and presented to us on the 1st of July 2024. So the IT department was well aware of the fact that they needed to procure a cybersecurity or a piece of software that would protect us in terms of cybersecurity theft. Obviously, the answer we got in council that was budgeted for, in other words, meaning, no, we haven't done the job. We'll now try and do it in the next financial year. That's pretty much their excuse every time.
And subsequently, the hack happened
and
at the beginning
happened,
of
exactly.
the year.
And obviously, that alone just tells you something that our administration, especially when it comes to this 35 million rand, I'm of the belief that there are a number of people, both politically and within our administration, that are involved in this matter.
Yeah.
Because it cannot be that a majority of councillors have now just turned a blind eye to this matter and the administration have now just suddenly, miraculously lost interest, yeah. Especially when it comes to reporting this matter. Because once issues like this hit the public expect councillors to report back to them on this.
Yeah.
And when the administration obviously do not do their job, then us as councillors now are made to look like as if we're not interested. But while a majority of them may not be interested because they might be compromised on this issue, there are a handful of us that are actually pushing for an update on this matter so that we can actually start taking people to task. Because while we do know that there are a number of bodies and entities investigating in this matter as well, it still falls down to council to also take action as well, because we don't know how far and how deep we are compromised in regards to this. Because while, yes, the money has been retrieved and there's money that's still out there and we're trying to get it, we don't know who the perpetrators yeah. actually are.
And they hacked into the payroll system. That opens huge avenues because they could be putting in ghost employees. We aren't aware that this could possibly be happening. Has anyone done any line item in terms of employees? How many employees are actually on the system who could possibly be ghost system? There are so many ways that this could be compromised. But, you know, like you said, there's no cyber security. And right now, is anything in place to secure our systems from another hack or possible embezzlement?
See, that right there is the greatest issue that I have, especially with our IT department and the municipal manager, whom we both had tasked earlier last year when CFO brought the report
yeah,
to us to actually to mitigate against us being exposed to such an attack. But since then, and post the money being taken and retrieved, there's nothing that indicates to council that any sort of measures have been put in place to prevent the next one from happening. So all we know is that the perpetrators are probably just waiting for the next opportune time to strike, and our administration have decided just yeah. to sleep on the job and not care. And it begs the question as to whether the IT department and the municipal manager, who is the accounting officer yeah. at the end of the day, really has the municipality's interest municipality's interest, whether if they're playing to their own interests, especially financial gain interests, or whether if they're looking at the municipal interests and ratepayers' interests and protecting the money that does not belong to them but actually belongs to ratepayers.
Yeah, but you know what? We've seen this. It's a systematic issue. I remember, and Stephanie, I'm going to bring you in there just to talk about emergency expenditure and how that has been a loophole for tenderpreneurs and massive amounts of contracts going through unaccounted for. So back we got the April 21 floods. But before that, in March 2019, we had some bad storms, and Kwadukuza municipality also experienced storm damaged various parts of the wards. I was working as a journalist at a local community paper, and I covered the story after a whistleblower came forward with some damning allegations. He claimed that the municipality had evoked emergency powers under Section 36 of the Supply Chain Management Policy. So when that is evoked, means that they don't have to go out for tender because they say it's an emergency work. It's just appoint the guy and get the work done. And this was coordinated with senior managers in the Civil Engineers and Human Settlement Department, and they appointed the service providers. Now, this is where the red flags began. They have this policy. So if you instigate a Section 36 appointment, the policy, it has to go through the chief financial officer to assess it and write it or and sign it off because, you know, they could possibly jipper the system. So this, in this case, the CFO was only notified 2 months later after the appointments were made and when the first invoice arrived for him to authorize payment. So what was the result of a 30 million rand in irregular expenditure, later confirmed by the Auditor General? And since no approved budget existed for this spending, it also violated the Municipal Finance Management Act. Okay, so once a case stands out, and I looked at it as well, it was a bridge in Ward 5 where the structure itself had remained intact but was allegedly rehabilitated at a cost of over 7 million rand. But what was actually damaged was only the access road leading to the bridge. I went there myself at that time and I took an independent civil engineer and asked for his professional assessment just for my own knowledge. And he did a proper analysis, and he said, with proper and full reconstruction rehabilitation, it would have cost him at a very healthy rate. 2 million, he would have made a massive profit. And what we saw on site didn't line with what the municipality had paid for. And there was a bill of quantities which also didn't reconcile what was on the ground. So the concerns were flagged. Internally, the finance department raised the alarm. Finally, a site inspection was done. And these written concerns were delivered to the municipal manager and the internal auditor. And according to the whistleblower report, these concerns were buried. Now, this whistleblowing report has been shared with the president, who then instigated the SIU investigation. So to appease everyone at that stage, I remember they appointed an independent review consultant to go there and assess all these rehabilitation programs and give the council a report back. What they didn't know was that the independent consultant who had been appointed by the municipality was actually one of the biggest consultants who does the most work for the municipality. So he wasn't even independent. He presented a report that was whitewashed, saying there was no, you know, untoward malfeasance on these projects, and that was basically put aside. 30 million and a wasteful expenditure. Does this happen often, Steph?
Yes, it does. And number one is because we've got no oversight. I've always said what we need is a clerk of works, a registered engineer that is a clerk of works that can go and clerk work to sign every stage of a claim, needs to sign that off and then be fully accountable for the work that's being done. I'll give you a simple example. What about the resurfacing of the roads in Ocean Drive? Just a tiny little example.
Okay.
They've added layers and layers of tar over the roads, and then they've left the manholes. So you fall basically into these huge potholes, which are manholes.
Yeah, I did that this morning.
So if there was a clerk of works, he would have realized that those potholes also needed, that those manholes also needed raising. And then he would have put in a special works order by saying, this is an extra, this needs to be done, and I'm not signing the work off until such time this is done. We've got no accountability at council. And from the time I was there, it starts with the MM. In my opinion, hashtag fire the MM.
Yeah.
This is where the rot has started, and that is where the rot will end. We've got no oversight. We've got no accountability. We've got no time frames. And it people just do their own thing over there.
And you know what also has come up is the same contractor who is given a job, you know, he does it. The job is so shoddy, he has to come back and redo the work. And then the third time, he gets paid again, does it again, and then redoes it. So we've looked at this up in Ward 22. One of the contractors has done the same job three times. And Yet they keep getting the same contractors to do the same work, get the same tenders. And hopefully this is what we're going to be looking at and making, looking at the accountability. We've just got a little hitch there. But you know what? We've seen how the public money is being treated as a personal piggy bank by those elected to serve. And we looked at the Zonda Commission, who said there needed to be a creation of a robust and independent public procurement regularity authority. Is this something, Sipho, that we could possibly look at? A body that oversees all these tenders and, you know, each ward. I mean, that would have made sense, where you assign each ward an oversight group that manages, you know, the contractor, sees what he's putting through, how is he working. Could that work?
I believe that an independent body as such would work. And I say this because, you know, recently an item was brought to the Finance Portfolio Committee in regards to the SOPs when it comes to the selection of panels, et cetera, of contractors. And there was a list of about 16 recommendations. Now, while the first 15 recommendations were not very contentious, the 16th one was very contentious, where if I were to paraphrase, it literally just said that a municipal manager would make the final judgment and the final decision in terms of who sits on that panel. So
yeah, was this for the grant, the 1.2 billion rand grant that was received? Was this the panel of contractors that were actually selected?
This was this just another one? An SEM process that was now being adjusted to accommodate
someone now gets put onto the list.
Just to kind of allow MM to make the final decision and he appoint whoever. But obviously,
how does he get the final decision? Is that what happened?
So that was brought to the Finance Portfolio Committee, and obviously with our representative in there, they obviously flagged this as a very huge concern, and it was brought to council. And fortunately, council accepted 15 out of the 16 recommendations, and we rejected the 16th one, being that the municipal manager makes the final decision on it, which is ridiculous. But obviously, coming back to the aspect of the independent body itself that does the oversight, I believe that would be a very... I believe that would be a very effective body to have.
Yeah.
Because there's a number of projects that take place. And to wait for councillors and to wait for municipal officials to go on site and do these things, it's a logistical nightmare. So to have these bodies placed within each ward, or at least clusters of wards to oversee these, I think it would be a lot more effective, especially when it comes to knowing whether if the municipality is getting bang for their buck.
Well, you know, the president signed the Public Procurement Act that's gone into law last year, but it still hasn't enacted. You know, they're saying that this could possibly help with this tenderpreneurship and the corruption. Stephanie, you had a little bit of an opinion on that. You think this could possibly solve the problem within local government?
Penny, from a business background and my own personal opinion and my gut feel is that this is wrong. If we have a small natural disaster in Ballito and it needs urgent attention, we won't be able to do it. We've got to go through the process, the procurement process, to find out who the government's appointed contractors are, which are all going to be this triple BEE thing.
Yeah, because they have put that clause in. It has
so,
to.
Yeah, well, of course, because, I mean, the fat cats get fatter.
Yeah.
So basically what happens is that the urgency of, example, fixing a hospital, that stalls until we can find the right people to do the job, instead of pulling in all our local resources immediately and getting it done.
So it's just going to hamstring the council.
So to me, it's between a rock and a hard place. Yeah. There are some good ideas, but I personally think that it's wrong because it's again, it's going to be for the cadres.
Yeah. So you know what? I actually reached out to Julius Kleinhans. He's the Outer Civic Organisation executive manager in the local government division. Now, Outer is a very It's a big civil organization, and they're very vocal nationally as well, on a national platform and on local government issues. And I asked them about the procurement process in local municipalities, and one of the questions I put to him was, what were the most common pitfalls? And with regards to transparency and oversight, is there a way for ratepayers to hold the municipalities accountable? And this is what he had to say.
Hi, thank you, Penny, for reaching out. I'd love to help. I can quickly try and do a voice note for you. In various municipalities, including Kwadukuza, we see that irregular expenditure and frozen wasteful expenditure, and basically these municipalities are plagued by procurement irregularities, and it often takes place, especially where there's systemic procurement failures. And it's unfortunately no exception in Kwadukuza. So firstly, one of the common pitfalls in municipal procurement is usually when deviation from competitive bidding takes place. And that's where municipalities often bypass open tender processes under the guise of urgency or emergencies without proper justification. So we've seen that some of these councillors or officials have even manipulated the process so that basically a community will be without water, or they force an emergency situation so that they can bypass these procurement processes and give their preferred bidders the tender. And obviously we know that a lot of times family and friends are part of that. Political interference. Tenders are frequently awarded to companies with political connections, regardless of their capability or price competitiveness. We've also seen poor planning and project management, where tenders are issued without clear specifications, leading to scope creep and cost overruns and project delays. We see that a lot of projects start, but nothing happens, and slowly but surely that process falls away, and unfortunately people don't get access to those basic services that's already been paid for. Then a lack of due diligence, where contractors are often appointed without proper vetting, leading to work being done by companies with no track record or incorrect registrations, and even those under investigation somewhere else. So a lot of these contractors often are not eligible or not capable of doing the work, yet they get the contracts, whether it's because of preference or some policies. And then weak contract management is also a big issue when it comes to common pitfalls. And that's, once tenders are awarded, there's little follow-up on performance or delivery. And that's where project management is so crucial, to ensure that projects are planned properly, scoped, so that the budget is correct to pay for the whole project, and that it's delivered on time. And there should be penalties and proper oversight to ensure that that project comes into fruition. When it comes to transparency and oversight mechanisms, it's a very, scrutinized area of late. And you can see that municipalities don't fail overnight, and these corruption tenders and issues don't occur overnight. Province has to exercise oversight. You've got a provincial SCOPA, and then your MPAC in your municipality, that's your public accounts committee, that's supposed to also have oversight on some of these elements. That's very important. And then, transparency is key. We believe that transparency is the enemy of corruption, and residents should be able to have oversight and access to tender documents, bid adjudication reports, and performance evaluations. But unfortunately, this is, I think, highly because of apathy, because we don't know what our rights are, and also because a lot of this information never gets shared transparently by the municipality, because there's no proper oversight. So we believe one of the root causes of the problems in our municipalities is because there's no proper business and residential, or let's say the municipal customer, oversight on how a municipality is performing, the decisions it's making, and whether a procurement and projects are properly scoped and adhered to. And I think where communities can get more organized, like I think in Kwadukuza, Dokra is a very good example, where a variety of community members and businesses are organized and they are exercising their rights and participating in the municipality's affairs. That's actually your constitutional rights. And to ensure that you as a shareholder, communities, resident, the customer of the municipality receives proper services. And I think that's where co-governance needs to come into play. And as communities, we need to also strengthen entities like DOCRA and also participate, give our time to go and sit in some of these council meetings and ask the tough questions or take the minutes of decisions that's being made to ensure that there's proper civic and business oversight on a municipality's performance and tender allocation and that those projects are followed through on.
Yeah, you see, very much what we've basically discussed.
Exactly.
So we're going to be ending. We're going to be ending on a final note. Steph, do you think that we have the power to turn this around?
Of course, we have the power to turn this around. We've just got to get rid of this horrible little disease called apathy.
Yeah.
And I think we get more community involvement. We get more backing for our councillors, the councillors that are working, that have got a big voice and are being ignored. We've got to give them support, even if it means giving them financial support, because the consequences are too horrific to even think about.
Yeah.
We've got a lot of people knocking on the door that want the votes, that are going to come into this area, and God forbid what could happen. So please support the councillors. Please support everybody that is doing good jobs. Go to the meetings and get rid of apathy. Please go to meetings. Your sheer presence there, you don't understand how powerful that is.
Yeah.
And Penny, thank you very much. Keep up the good fight.
Thanks, Steph. And Sipho, one last word from you. Are we going to see some action on this hack? You're going to keep on at it.
We will always be there to apply pressure because that's our job at the end of the day, Penny. But obviously, to come on the point that Stephanie has raised as well, I think it's very crucial, especially in this dispensation, political dispensation, that the community must get involved. Or if not get involved, at least inform themselves as to what's going on in the municipality. Who are the vocal councillors that are actually advocating for their interests in the municipality as opposed to other people's interests.
Yeah.
So, I think if civic society, because currently there's a lot of activity from DOCRA, CORA, et cetera, et cetera. But I think even those that aren't a part of such bodies, just if they have the time.
And support the civic organizations.
Mm. Yeah,
so, you know, we know the problems. We've talked about them. We raged about them. I almost feel the public's losing, you know, the ability to be outraged. That's how bad it's gotten. But awareness alone is not enough. We can't be echo chambers of outrage. We need accountability. So as investigations continue, we'll keep watching, asking hard questions, and reporting what needs to be known. Thanks, everyone, for listening, and see you next week.
Thank you, Penny.
Thanks so much, Penny.
Uncensored with Penny Faree is proudly sponsored by IPSS Electronic Security. When it comes to security, don't leave it to chance. Trust the experts at IPSS Security as the only CISA-approved security provider on the Dolphin Coast in all categories and the only local security company also accredited for CCTV offsite monitoring. With over 4 million rand invested in AI technology, they protect over 35 upmarket residential estates, spotting threats in real time. If action is needed, their rapid response and tactical teams, backed by the largest fleet in the region, is ready to act. For unmatched security, contact IPSS Security today at 0861 324 777. Your safety is their priority.